I'm not going to sing. But I thought that'd be a perfect way to start the morning pit here at the beginning of the week when we know that Pitt is going to that West Texas town of El Paso where I once saw Pitt play a 3-0 bowl. That's what I was going to do. I was going to do a parody of El Paso to start off the morning pit today. Of, you know, I mean, first of all, I wasn't going to subject you to my singing, but if I did, it was going to be, you know, out in the West Texas town of El Paso, I saw Pitt play a 3-0 bowl. But unfortunately, I didn't actually see Pitt play that game. I watched that game on TV, but I didn't actually attend that bowl game back in 2008, that 3-0 loss to Oregon State. So I can't, I couldn't with any authenticity or sincerity sing, I saw Pitt play a 3-0 bowl. I watched it on television, as most of you did back in the old, you know, standard definition broadcast of 2008. At least it was in my house at that time. And it all looked very washed out and, you know, bright but cloudy at the same time. A very strange atmospheric condition that I couldn't quite identify. And I chalked it up to being my television broadcast. But then I went to El Paso 10 years later and actually did attend the Sun Bowl. And I found out that, no, that's just how it looks in El Paso. It's just all very washed out, very bright but cloudy, not as hot as you would expect it to be, very windy, and right next door to Mexico. But either way, welcome to the Morning Pit here on a Monday as we get started in a new week. And it feels like this weekend was full of Pit stuff. I mean, there was Pit things happening all over the place, you know, from... certainly basketball got things started, the bowl announcement then at the end of the weekend, recruiting things and transfer things throughout the weekend, and soccer and volleyball and all kinds of things happening in the world of Pitt sports. We have a ton to get to today on the Morning Pitt. While you're here, make sure you like and subscribe this video, of course. Click the like button. We appreciate that. And then subscribe to our YouTube channel. That subscribe button's right down there. You click that and you can make sure you never miss any of our exclusive Pitt video content. We do live streams, we do live post-game shows, and of course we do these Morning Pitt videos every day, Monday through Friday, that we release right here on youtube.com/PantherLair.com. You don't want to miss that. You want to make sure that you catch all of our videos that we post. You want to catch all of our live streams. Click the subscribe button, turn on notifications, and you'll get an alert sent to your phone. Look at all those notifications on there. You'll get a notification sent to your phone to let you know that we are going live at youtube.com/PantherLair.com. You don't want to miss any of that. And we will definitely have a live show after the Sun Bowl, Friday, December 30th, 2 p.m. Eastern time, the kickoff. That makes it what, like a noon kickoff in Mountain Time, because El Paso is not even Central Time Zone. It's Mountain Time Zone, which is fine. Doesn't make much of a difference, except when you're flying back. And it feels like it took extra long because you lose 2 hours somewhere over Chicago. The Sun Bowl, we all laugh about the Sun Bowl. I mean, the Sun Bowl is going to be inextricably linked to one of the worst football games any of us have ever seen in the 2008 game, the 3-0 game. And that's never going to change. I mean, Pitt fans, Pitt media, people who follow Pitt are always going to know the Sun Bowl for that game. And that's what it's always going to be defined by. Never mind that 10 years later, they went back and had just as incompetent of an offensive attack as they did in 2008, except they actually scored points as opposed to getting shut out. Fun fact, maybe not so much fun if you're Frank Cignetti, but fun fact, the last two Sun Bowls have led to Pitt's offensive coordinator being fired. How about that? Matt Kavanaugh was given his walking papers after the 2008 game. Sean Watson dismissed after the 2018 game. Maybe it's only Sun Bowls that end in the year, you know, where the year ends in the number 8. And Frank Cignetti will be safe. I actually do think Frank Cignetti will be safe. I think he's got another year at Pitt. He's certainly recruiting high school prospects and transfers as if he's got another year at Pitt. So I would say no matter the outcome on Friday, December 30th, it's going to be, you know, Frank Cignetti's offense again in 2023. That's another topic for another day. And whatever we want to say about the Sun Bowl, it is one of the longest running bowl games. It is a bowl game with as long a history as any. I mean, it's not the Rose Bowl, but it's not far behind in terms of history, longevity. And what's always intriguing and interesting to me about the Sun Bowl is how it exists in the local lore. you know, this is one of the bowl games that doesn't care as much, and all the bowl games care less and less about this as time goes on, but this is one of the bowl games that doesn't care as much about traveling fans and filling hotel rooms in the local tourist industry. That's some concern, but, you know, there's some consideration given to that. But for the most part, they don't really care at the Sun Bowl because it's a big local event. When they announced the teams yesterday, they had the 2022 Sun Bowl Queen was there. I mean, it's a big deal in El Paso. And so they don't, you know, I mean, it sells local tickets as opposed to just relying on traveling fans. Now, most bowl games these days, I don't think care all that much about traveling fans, because it's all about TV money, and that's why the decisions are not really even made by the bowl games at all. They're made by ESPN, who puts these bowls together and creates the matchups to try to make as many people happy as possible, but mostly to try to drive the television ratings. So Pitt's back in El Paso for the third time in, what's the math here, 15 years? 2008, 2018, and now 2022. And you know, whatever we want to say about that game, whatever we want to say about the history of that game, the 2008 game, the 2018 game, you want to say about 1972 or 1989, the other two times that Pitt has been in the Sun Bowl, and they won both of those, although I think in 89 it was the John Hancock Bowl played in El Paso. Either way, Pitt won those first two, they've lost the last two, and now they'll get a chance to take on UCLA, as I say, on Friday, December 30th, 2 o'clock kickoff Eastern time. You'll be able to watch locally on KDKA, so that's kind of nice for those of us using the old antenna. We don't have to stream that game. I don't have to worry about, you know, I don't know if this happens to you. If you stream games, you watch games through Hulu or YouTube TV or however you stream it, even the ESPN app, and probably you're on Twitter and you've got, you know, if you're like me, you've got notifications turned on for the Pitt Football Twitter account. And I'll get a notification that pops up and says interception or touchdown or whatever, and the play hasn't even snapped yet on my TV. That's a little frustrating. I'll also keep the official box score going on the laptop, you know, as I watch games at home or here in the PantherLair.com offices. And I'll try not to glance down because the stream is inevitably behind. And when I glance down, I'll see that there's already been a score. There's already been a play update. I can remember the Virginia game this year. My stream was behind. And so I didn't see the Marquez Williams pick six that opened the game, but it showed up on my, you know, the official box score on my laptop. I said, wait, a pick six? How many passes has Brennan Armstrong thrown? The game, you know, barely has even started. Even if I'm behind, I can't imagine that, you know, this play has already happened. Sure enough, first play. And then, you know, all of a sudden this box score showing a second pick six. I said, what? Something's got to be wrong here. This isn't right. So anyway, that's cool. We get to watch it through the old digital antenna and see that thing happen live in real time. But Pitt taking on UCLA here. First time they faced the Bruins since 1972 when Mark Harmon, yes, that Mark Harmon, the actor, was the Bruins quarterback. Son of, I think, Heisman Trophy winner Tom Harmon, who apparently played at Michigan. Look, this is what happens when bowl games, all right, when bowl announcements are made and bowl pairings are announced. You spend all day yesterday learning all these little factoids about the opponent, particularly if it's a team that you haven't really seen a lot of, certainly haven't played this year. And if you bring in a team from the West Coast, there's a lot of questions to be answered there. And so we all spent a lot of time learning about UCLA yesterday. And our good friend Sam Shula, who is probably the number one Pitt historian, pointed out the Mark Harmon, Tom Harmon, Mark Harmon, the actor, UCLA Pitt connection, and he was the quarterback for the Bruins the last time Pitt played UCLA. Dave Wanstead was on that Pitt team that faced UCLA in 1972. And that's about it as far as the history of that series goes. Pitt and UCLA used to play fairly often, but as we say, you know, it's been about 50 years since they've faced off. And UCLA 9-3 this season. They lost at Oregon. They lost to Arizona and USC. Opened the season 6-0, improved to 8-1 with that loss to 6-0. Then they lost to Oregon and they won two more, so they were 8-1. Excuse me, still having a pretty good season. And then they lost two of their last three games. They lost to Arizona. That one was 34-28. They lost to USC 48-45 in a pretty lively game. I mean, a real back and forth battle with USC. They ultimately ended up coming out on the losing end, but then they finished the season with a win at Cal. But those two wins, or those two losses, excuse me, the Arizona and USC games, they lost by a combined total of 9 points. Not exactly blowouts. So they lost to, you know, Oregon by 15, but this is a pretty competitive UCLA team. Head coach Chip Kelly, who I think, as I was reviewing UCLA yesterday, I was reminded of the line in The Hangover after Mike Tyson knocks out Zach Galifianakis and what's his name, Ed Helms or whatever, says, "Oh, he still got it." You know, Chip Kelly's still got it. I mean, Chip Kelly's still one of the great offensive coaches in college football, and this UCLA team looks like it. They average 508 yards per game, 40 points per game, one of the top offenses nationally, and they really do it with a balance, almost 250 rushing yards per game, about 260 passing yards per game, and they're scoring all over the place, and they're, you know, doing it in a lot of different ways. They are run heavy, with Zach Charbonnet as the running back, 1,359 yards, 14 touchdowns. Quarterback Dorian Thompson-Robinson, he also rushed for 632 yards and 11 touchdowns. And that's probably the really interesting matchup in this game, is how well UCLA runs the ball, how much they run the ball, the success they have with Charbonnet and Thompson-Robinson running the ball against what we know is, Pitt's strength. You know, maybe the strongest element of this entire team, offense, defense, special teams, is the run defense and how good they are at stopping the run. And they have been since Pat Narduzzi arrived. It's always been the point of emphasis, and this is what they've always done really well. Well, they're going to get a challenge against a UCLA team that I had the rankings put up here, is the number 4 rushing offense in the country. You know, the number 3 in total offense, number 4 in rushing offense, number 10 in scoring offense. They're number, top 40 in passing offense, largely because they run it so much. And so that's really going to be the challenge. Now, we've seen Pitt face some running quarterbacks this season. Dorian Thompson-Robinson is not going to be the first running quarterback we've seen Pitt take on. Jeff Sims, Malik Cunningham, Drake May could run a little bit. Riley Leonard was athletic enough to run a little. We've seen it against Pitt's defense. And by and large, I think Pitt has done pretty well. Now, Jeff Sims made a couple plays. Malik Cunningham made a big play catching a pass on a trick play. Drake May obviously ran a little bit. And Drake May is not the same kind of runner as Jeff Sims or Dorian Thompson-Robinson. But he is a quarterback who was mobile enough to make plays with his feet. And we saw him do that a couple times against Pitt. But they largely kept Riley Leonard contained, I thought, in that game against Duke. And so I think they've done well. They just gave up one or two plays pretty much each of those games against running quarterbacks, which I think overall is not terrible. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to contain those guys all game, and you're not going to contain Dorian Thompson-Robinson all game either. But you can, you know what to expect, I think, going into this. Charbonnet is an interesting runner. He's kind of a bigger back. I'm not sure if he has the speed that Izzy Abanikanda has, but he's obviously a very productive back. The yards he put up, like I said, he put up 1,350 yards and 14 touchdowns. He did it in 10 games, so he was very successful this season. And it's the kind of challenge that I think Pitt likes. You know what I mean? I think they want to face, Pitt's defense wants to face those offenses that are going to emphasize the run, that are going to try and pound it out on the ground. And that's what Pitt wants to do as well. UCLA's defense, as you kind of turn your focus there, they've given up numbers. Top 30 rushing defense, far worse against the pass, 120th nationally, giving up 275 passing yards per game. Total defense, they're 88th nationally. Their scoring defense, they're giving up 28 points per game. Now, obviously, that's okay when you're scoring 40 points per game, but they've gotten beat a little bit. Now, some of that, some of those passing yards, I think Caleb Williams, I think USC had 470 passing yards on UCLA. So some of those things get skewed a little bit by, big jumps. One or two big games here or there. But overall, if just statistically, the pass defense is a weakness for UCLA, or at least it's where they've been taken. They've been beaten so far this season. So you get really an interesting matchup there with trying to see if Pitt's offense can find its groove and try to, you know, put up some passing yards. I mean, there were games this season where they faced what should have been susceptible defenses, and they were unable to capitalize or you know, really take advantage of those situations. The Carolina game obviously comes to mind. But here they could be facing another one. But I mean, ultimately it's going to come down to they're going to run the ball. And that's, you know, and we're going to have this caveat throughout the month of December. But if Izzy Abanikanda plays in this game, and he's made no pronouncement one way or the other, but if he does, you know, obviously that's going to be the emphasis. Even if Abanikanda doesn't play, though, Rodney Hammond and Sebo Flemister are going to be called on, and Vincent Davis and Daniel Carter. I mean, they're still going to try to establish the run and get things going that way. UCLA, like I say, is, you know, statistically their defense is better against the run than it is against a pass. But that could be, sometimes those numbers get skewed a little bit by what teams are trying to do against them. Of course, there's so many questions, though, as we move through here. And I mean, this is Monday. Maybe we'll have more answers by the end of the week. Maybe we'll have more answers by tomorrow or maybe tonight. Who knows? But there are questions about who's going to play in this game for Pitt. You know, we know Kalijah Kancey is not going to play. He's out due to injury. But it has been made sort of clear last week. And then again yesterday when Pat Narduzzi had his press conference sort of announcing the Sun Bowl. It's been made clear that Kalijah Kancey intended to play in this game or would have played in this game if he hadn't gotten hurt in the, missed the second half of the Duke game. He had an injury in the second half against Duke, didn't play at Miami, and won't play in the bowl game because his shoulder surgery, I think, on his shoulder. And so, it's a nice sentiment that Kalijah Kancey intended to play in this game. I sort of look at it as the surgery, the injury, took the decision out of his hands. He didn't have to make the decision of whether or not he was going to play because medically he couldn't, and he can't. So I like the sentiment, though. I don't know what Izzy Abanikanda is going to do. I think there are a few guys on this team that are facing a decision. And quite frankly, there are a few guys on this team who are facing a decision not just about opting out of the bowl game, but about transferring. And we've seen, five transfers so far. Up through the end of last week, there will be more coming. I think there will be more between now and the bowl game, and I think there'll be more after the bowl game. But I think there are some positions where we don't really know who's going to play. And we've talked about this stuff on the PantherLair.com message board, and I'm going to plug that right now, Panther-Lair.com, Pittsburgh.Rivals.com. If you want to kind of get our latest thoughts, and we'll have some more stuff up this morning, things that I think are pretty interesting that you'll probably find pretty interesting. We'll have some more stuff up there on the message boards at PantherLair.com that I think you'll want to check out as it pertains to who's going to be playing in this bowl game and what the Pitt coaches are going to be looking to do to try to, make moves in the transfer portal, as well as fill out the recruiting class heading into signing day, which is less than 3 weeks away, 2.5 weeks away. And so, these next few weeks are going to be very interesting for the movement on the roster of who's going to be playing in this bowl game, who's not, and, whether the guy's opting out or opting out to go to the NFL, if they're opting out to because they're transferring, or if they intend to go to the NFL, but they're still going to play anyway. I think there's a lot of moving parts here, and we don't have all the answers to it. And we probably won't for at least a few days, maybe a week or more. We'll have to see what comes. So that was the big announcement yesterday. But the weekend really started on Friday night when Pitt went to NC State. And, you talk about improbable outcomes. You know what I mean? You talk about unlikely outcomes. And you talk about Pitt going to Miami a week ago for the regular season finale of the football season and just absolutely thumping Miami. Which they rarely do, and doing it on the road where they rarely win. And you say, that's an unlikely outcome. That is very, improbable. So then you turn around and send the basketball team to NC State. And, it was such a running joke for, of how long and how much Pitt struggled against NC State since joining the ACC. It was truly a team they could not beat. And, you know, I think they were something like 3-21 over the previous 24 games entering Friday night. Well, make it 4-21 because Pitt ends up with an 8-point win, 68-60. I predicted a 7-point win, by the way, 77-70. Didn't quite get it right. You know, I was off. I was in the 70s. The game ended up in the 60s, but kind of called it. Don't read any of the analysis of why I thought they would win or what I thought was going to happen, because that stuff, when I said that John Hughley was going to round into form and bounce back and have his big breakout game, that didn't quite happen. But don't read that stuff. Just read the final prediction score where I didn't nail it, but I called that Pitt would win. But what a win. I mean, seriously, what a win. And that's not because we think NC State is great or they're going to be a Final Four team or anything like, or win the ACC. But to go on the road against a high major opponent for the second game in a row, following the winner at Northwestern, who I think yesterday beat Michigan State, right? But to go on the road against a high major team for the second game in a row, and really, they didn't dominate the way they dominated Northwestern. But what they did was largely control the game. I was looking at some of the stats in the box score. Pitt never relinquished the lead in the second half. It was a 7-point game, 5-point game, 5-point game at halftime. And Pitt never gave up that lead. They held the lead for the entire 20 minutes. And I think this is probably the most remarkable element of this game to me. The thing that stood out the most in Pitt's win at NC State. So they have a 5-point lead at halftime. Around the 15-20 mark, they pushed it up to an 11-point lead. So it looked like they're really firmly in control. Well, in about 2 minutes, NC State cut that lead down to 4. It was a 4-point lead at the 13:08 mark. And Pitt responded. Greg Elliott hit a 3-pointer. Jamarius Burton made 2 free throws. And Nelly Cummings hit a 3-pointer and drew a foul and completed the 4-point play. And all of a sudden, in about 3.5 minutes, their lead, which had gone from 11 down to 4, was now back up to 12. They weathered the storm. And it held on like that for a few more minutes, but then NC State cut back. They got back in the game. They cut the lead down to 6 at the 7:50 mark. And the response came again. Nike Sabandi hit a 3. Jamarius Burton hit back-to-back field goals, like a pull-up jumper that he loves and a layup. And with 5 minutes to go, it was a 9-point game again. They had effectively put the game away. They weathered 2 storms from NC State. NC State made 2 runs. They kind of flirted with cutting the lead down to 7 or 6 in the final few minutes. But I think after they held on against that NC State run where it was under 8 minutes, and NC State had cut it down to 6, and they answered with Sabandi hitting a 3 and Burton hitting two field goals, two 2-point baskets to get it back up to 9. I mean, that was big time response there. And it was a case of Pitt's veteran guards, I don't want to say taking over the game, but making the plays that their team needed and scoring when they needed to score and making sure that this team didn't slip in the second half, because we've seen Pitt teams wilt in the second half. I shouldn't even say in the second half. We've seen Pitt teams in the past few years wilt in the face of adversity. That when opponents make a run, if they cut into the lead or start stretching out a little bit, they just kind of collapse, and everybody thinks they need to be the hero, and they don't keep playing as a team. But this team on Friday night did, just like they did against Northwestern and the 3 wins that came before that. Now they're on a little 5-game winning streak. They're first in 2 years. And they've got some guys playing at a really, really high level. Jamarius Burton was outstanding in that game on Friday night. 24 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists. He had 2 turnovers, 2 steals. Blake Hinson continues to be a spark for this team. I mean, Blake Hinson, I was going to say Blake Hinson is exactly what this team needs. But the reality is, they've got a bunch of guys who are exactly what this team needs. Blake Hinson is exactly what this team needs in terms of the energy he brings, his shooting from outside, and just the attitude that he has. You know, Nelly Cummings, I think, and they used him more off the ball, I thought, on Friday night. Maybe giving him some more opportunities to get shots. And you know, he responded. He had a nice game. He finished with 6 points, so... I guess I got caught up thinking about that 4-point play. Cummings was one of seven from the floor. That was the one basket he made, was the 4-point play. So, yeah, he had a great game. I think they wanted to get some more shots for Cummings. That's probably why they used him off the ball a little bit more than they had in the past. But, I mean, I think he is a guy who can hunt shots like that. I think that's a good role for him. Nike Sabandi, as a spark coming off the bench, has been playing his best basketball at Pitt over the past four or five games. And Jamarius Burton is just, I mean, he's the guy. People keep comparing him to Brad Wanamaker. And, I mean, to be honest, I love that comparison. I think that's great. I feel like he might be a little faster, maybe a little more athletic than Wanamaker. But, you know, his pull-up jumpers are at the point where you don't hesitate when you see him take it. You know, you see him go for the pull-up jumper, and instead of being like, oh, don't, you know, there's a feeling of confidence every time he does it. He gets to the glass. He finishes around the glass. He finishes through contact. He draws contact a lot. He's a leader for this team. And I think he's the kind of guy who will make plays to pull the team back in it, but also can keep the team composed so that they don't fade. So the guys don't lose sight of what they need to do to win games. You know, Greg Elliott seems to be coming along a little bit. I think the last couple of games he's hit some more threes where his shot wasn't really falling early in the season. They've got a lot of nice pieces put together here. And the one biggest piece, the one missing piece, is the one guy that I still am not too concerned about, and that's John Hughley. Now, at some point, if we go a few more games this season, we get, you know, further into the season, and he's still only scoring 2 points a game. Like, once they get into ACC play, and he's still only scoring 2 points a game, yeah, I might get a little concerned at that point. But I'm not right now, because, I mean, he's got enough body of work. I still believe he's, you know, capable of being a really good player and playing at the level he has played at before and being this team's best player. So, I mean, they have Vanderbilt on Wednesday night on the road, and then they have the Sacred Heart and North Florida games. If he's coming out of the Sacred Heart and North Florida games and still only scoring like 2 or 4 points per game heading into the ACC, you know, sort of real ACC opener against Syracuse, what date is that game? December 20th? So if he goes through those next two, there's the Vanderbilt game and then, the Sacred Heart and North Florida games. If he comes out of that stretch and he's still kind of floundering, still not really producing at the level that you expect him to, then I'll start to get a little concerned. But my guess is by the time we get to that Syracuse game on the 20th, he's going to be looking more and more like himself. And by the time you get to, what's their first game in January? They play Virginia on January 3rd, Clemson on the 7th, Duke on the 11th. You know, by mid-January, Georgia Tech and Louisville, 14th and 18th, by mid-January, I think he'll be playing at the level we've all grown accustomed to seeing him play. I'm still not concerned about John Hughley. I'm still willing to say it's just taking him time to get back on track after being injured in September. You know, I'm still confident in his ability to rebound off the court and on the court, and play at a high level. There are reasons to be optimistic about this team. And we talked all offseason about how this team was built differently from previous Capel teams, about having all the veteran guards, about having shooters, and surrounding John Hughley with that group, with a group of veteran guards and guys who can make shots. And that's happening. You know what I mean? That's coming together. The veteran guards are there and they're playing like veteran guards. The shooters are there and they're making shots. The thing that's missing is Hughley, but they've been able to win because of how those other guys have played. And so I think it's a pretty good situation, because you can look at it right now and say, wow, there are things they're doing really well. And there's one or two really big things they still can add to make themselves even better. And so you don't want to get too far down the road of predicting outcomes for this team. It's still too early in the season for that. But they're playing really well right now. I think we can say that. They're playing really well right now while getting minimal contributions from their best player. It's not a bad place to be in. It's not a bad spot. So it's going to be interesting. It'll be exciting to see what happens on Wednesday night when they play at Vanderbilt. You know, we because they have that game on Wednesday night at 9 o'clock tip off, we're gonna do the live Panther Lair show on Tuesday night. We're gonna do that tomorrow night. So we will I'll make sure to tweet it out and all that kind of thing. We'll update that and make sure everybody knows what's going on. But we'll have the live Panther Lair show on Tuesday night at 8:30. So don't forget that. That's tomorrow night. And then, you know, we'll have the morning pit videos every day this week. We got a lot of, there's going to be a lot of stuff to get through. Transfers, recruiting, bowl game preparations. And then, of course, what this basketball team is doing is we also keep an eye on the men's soccer program and the women's volleyball team, too, because there's a lot going on in Pitt sports right now. And so hopefully you know where to stay tuned in to make sure you never miss any of it. It's PantherLair.com, Panther-Lair.com, Pittsburgh.Rivals.com. The most comprehensive source of Pitt sports news on the internet, football, basketball, and recruiting. You find it all at PantherLair.com. Of course, message boards where you can interact and talk to other Pitt fans all day, every day. Panther-Lair.com. And of course, stay right here on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/PantherLair.com. Like this video and subscribe, and make sure you never miss any of our exclusive Pitt video content. We appreciate you watching this video today. Hope you had a great weekend. If you follow Pitt stuff, you probably did have a good weekend. My fantasy teams did well. The Steelers won. Pitt won. It was all going well for you this weekend. You don't care about my fantasy teams, but I did, so that was pretty cool. But hope you had a good weekend. Hope you enjoyed it. And I'm going to get back to work practicing my reappropriated version of El Paso It's never going to be debuted. But hopefully you can use your own imagination and come up with your own lyrics. I'll start it off for you. It's out in the West Texas town of El Paso. I watched Pitt lose a 3-0 bowl. See where you go from there. We will talk to you tomorrow morning, Tuesday morning, for the Morning Pit right here on youtube.com/PantherLaircom.